The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on AM 1420, The Answer.
Welcome indeed. It is 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, and we are ready to rock and or roll. You decide. Thanks for being with us. It's Monday morning, the eighth morning of the fourth month, year of our Lord, 2024. We got a nice show lined up for you today as we try to bring you each and every day. And because it's Monday, you know the first part of that show is going to be 9:35 when we welcome our friend Doctor. I just gave him a PhD. Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jim Jordan, representative of our 4th Congressional District here in the state of Ohio. He will be joining us. We're looking forward to that conversation. I'm going to tell you something. There's an event happening at 3 o'clock today that has a whole lot of people really, really, really excited. I've got some very, very, very deep insight into that that I will have for you at the top of the Top 9 at 9, which is coming up just momentarily here. I've got some seriously, seriously important information that you need to have. And if you don't have it, well, woe is you. Woe unto you. You're going to want to know what I've got to share with you at the top of the Top 9 at 9. So that's coming up here in just a couple of minutes. What do you say we dive right into that? Let's do our Top 9 at 9 right now. But first, of course, send me your flags. I want your flags that you pledge your allegiance to each and every morning when we do this. I've loved the response that I've been getting so far. People are posting them on my Facebook. They're posting them to my Twitter. They're posting them to my, not so much my Truth Social. I'm very inactive on Truth Social. I should be more. Anyway, if you're on Facebook at Always Right Radio, if you're on Twitter at France Rand, send me a picture of the flag that you pledge to every morning, especially if you're mobile. If you're in the car at this hour and you've got it mounted someplace in your car, that's awesome. Make sure you send those so that we can highlight you and your flag display. For our Pledge of Allegiance, which I proudly ask you to do now, stand and put your hand on your heart and join us for the pledge. If you are not a believer in what that flag represents, don't fake it. We would rather know who you are than be taken in by your lies and your virtue signaling. So if you are not necessarily a believer, then just go ahead and take a knee like a good little Marxist. The rest of us will stand proudly and say... Right, we got a glitch here for some reason. Let's try it one more time.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
No more glitch days. We already had a glitch day on Friday. Those are gone now. What do you say we rock and roll, huh?
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
All right, let's do this thing. We have a lot of news to get to today.
Number 1.
It's going to get dark for a few minutes today.
Number two.
Former President Donald Trump released a video. What? You wanted more? Sorry, that's literally all you need to know about number one. Former President Donald Trump released a video on Truth Social this morning outlining his policies on abortion. And if and when he successfully returns to the White House, that is, the president dispelled any myths that he might be pushing for a ban on a national ban on abortion. He said he believes it should be left up to each individual state to establish their own policy on abortion restrictions.
What my position is on abortion and abortion rights, especially since I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars, both sides, wanted and, in fact, demanded be ended. Roe v. Wade. They wanted it ended. It must be remembered that the Democrats are the radical ones on this position because they support abortion up to and even beyond the ninth month. The concept of having an abortion in the later months and even execution after birth, and that's exactly what it is. The baby is born, the baby is executed after birth, is unacceptable, and almost everyone agrees with that. My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state.
So President Trump says it's got to be up to the states, which is a good message. The question is are the states up to the challenge? We were not last November, as everyone knows, and that battle must continue.
Number three.
Current President Biden is unveiling another student loan handout plan this morning. In his ongoing attempt to circumvent the Supreme Court, the court struck down multiple versions of Biden's plans for student loan bailouts. 11 Republican-led states filed a lawsuit against the version he announced in February. The new Biden plan is expected to affect up to 30 million Americans who will all see sizable portions of their student debt slashed before the November election. I don't need to tell you what that means. This is straight-up vote purchasing with taxpayer dollars. There's nothing else to say about it. Biden's plan Biden is unveiling that plan, I should say, during a public event in Wisconsin today. The central pillar focuses on cutting loans that have exceeded their principal amount due to interest. It would cut up to $20,000 in accrued interest, while borrowers who make less than $120,000 or couples who make less than $240,000 would be allowed to cut all of their accrued interest beyond the principal amount. Vote buying. It's a scam, as is everything in the entire Biden regime. Sorry, not sorry.
Number four.
Anti-Israel protesters are also anti-American protesters. How do we know? Dearborn, Michigan. They closed out Ramadan by chanting, "Death to America and death to Israel," during an international Al-Quds Day rally on American soil in America. Right here, death to America, in America. This is where it happened. And these people are allowed to stay here for some reason.
We've been asked in the past, why are our protests on the International Day of Quds, why are they so anti-America? Why don't we just focus more on Israel and not talk so much about America? Gaza has shown the entire world why these protests are so anti-America. Because it's the United States government that provides the funds for all of the atrocities that we just heard about. And this is why Imam Khomeini, who declared the International Day of Quds, this is why he would say to pour all of your chants and all of your shouts upon the head of America. Malcolm X said,
"Death to America, death to America, death to America." Somebody tell me how and why these people shouldn't be rounded up, put on planes, and shipped to Gaza immediately. Sorry again, not sorry.
Number five.
House Speaker Mike Johnson marked the 6-month point since the deadly Hamas attack on Israel. by calling for an end to the lecturing of Israel as it fights the terrorist group. His statement released on a Sunday yesterday comes as a growing number of Democrats in Congress and the Biden administration increasingly criticize Israel for how it has conducted its campaign in Gaza and calling for the stopping the flow of U.S. arms. Johnson's statement read, quote, 6 months ago today, Israelis suffered unspeakable violence and terror. The slaughter of innocent lives by Hamas will forever be etched in the memory of our Jewish brothers and sisters, and I join Americans across the country who are mourning the loss of those tragically taken on October 7th. Since that massacre, it's been appalling to watch anti-Israel rhetoric and support for an unconditional ceasefire grow among Democrats in Washington, even as Hamas holds 130 Israelis and Americans hostage in Gaza. Unlike our Democrat colleagues, House Republicans remain clear-eyed about who the enemy in this fight is, and we will not stop working and praying until each of the hostages is returned home. Today of all days, Washington must be united in our support for our great ally Israel as they fight for the sovereignty and right, their sovereignty and their right to exist. It's time we stop lecturing Israel on how it should best defend itself and begin equipping our friend with the resources necessary to eliminate the threat of Hamas once and for all. Well done, Speaker Mike Johnson.
Number six.
The Israeli Defense Forces insisted, by the way, speaking of this conflict, the war is not coming to a close. That rumor followed reports of a ground troop withdrawal from southern Gaza. Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, spokesperson for the IDF, said the military completed its mission in the Khan Yunis area, leading to a rotation of troops. While the focus of the campaign does remain on the southern city of Rafah, it is a decline in forces, he said, but there are more operations that need to be conducted. Rafah is clearly a stronghold. We need to dismantle Hamas capabilities wherever they are. This is just another stage in the war effort. The war is not over. War can only be over when they, hostages, come home and when Hamas is gone. Completely agree.
Number seven.
During a Saturday press conference, Dawn Staley, head coach of the South Carolina women's basketball team, said in Cleveland that male trans-identifying players should be allowed to compete against women as long as the athletes consider themselves to be women. Her response shocked the sports world.
One of the major issues facing women's sports right now is the debate, discussion topic about the inclusion of transgender athletes, biological males, in women's sports. I was wondering if you would tell me your position on that issue.
Damn, you got deep on me, didn't you? I'm under the opinion of if you're a woman, you should play. If you consider yourself a woman, and you want to play sports, or vice versa, you should be able to play.
What you just heard was about 40 seconds of silence, shrugging, tilting her head, and trying to figure out a way to not cancel her own career. That's what you just heard. Women's sports activist Riley Gaines said she knows that and doesn't believe Staley for 1 second.
And personally, I don't think she believes what she said. If you watch the video, her silence, the hesitation, and that drink of water, I think it spoke volumes. I think she knew she had to be politically correct, and I know about as good as anyone that pressure exists, and it's real. But the bottom line is, she knows perfectly well that men's basketball, it's a totally different sport than women's basketball. That's obvious by the speed of the game, the size of the ball, the sheer amount of layups in women's basketball compared to dunks when a player gets a fast break in men's basketball, the distance of the three-point line, the list goes on. So what I think this boils down to is she didn't have the courage to stand with women. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for her, and she blew it. And truthfully, my guess is she's okay with it until her team defeated by one or more men playing on the opposite team.
People should have
put two biological males on the Iowa team that they beat yesterday for the national championship, and she loses by 50. Everybody knows that. So does she. But she had to try to save her career. She was asked a cancelable question, and so she had to lie about how she felt about it.
Number 8.
Back to former President Donald Trump. He brought in a record $50.5 million at a campaign fundraiser in Palm Beach on Saturday night. The RNC announced the haul far outpaced that of Joe Biden, who brought in $26 million at a ritzy New York City fundraiser on March 28th, alongside former Democratic presidents Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, as well as other heavyweight celebrities, including Lizzo. Trump's fundraising event broke every fundraising record in history for a Republican or a Democrat, according to the RNC. Meanwhile, after locking up the nomination in one of the fastest primaries in modern political history, Donald J. Trump is winning poll after poll and proving that the enthusiasm is on his side. It's clearer than ever that we have the message, the operation, and the money to propel President Trump to victory on November 5th, end quote. How about it? $50 million raised in one night by himself, with just him as the star, not with former presidents the way Biden had to do, along with these celebrities as well. So that's really good news. And
number 9.
President Biden, back to that clown, has helped to balloon the number of foreign nationals living in the United States who are eligible to receive TPS, that's temporary protected status, makes them ineligible for deportation. That number now ballooned to 1.2 million. As of late last month, almost 1.2 million foreign nationals are eligible to receive TPS so they can stay in the U.S., secure work permits, take your jobs, avoid deportation. Since taking office, Biden and the Department of Homeland Security has added Afghanistan, Burma, Cameroon, Ethiopia, Ukraine, and Venezuela to the list of countries where nationals residing in the U.S. but who do not have any immigration status can qualify for TPS. Last September, Biden expanded TPS to almost 500,000 Venezuelans in the U.S. That was after almost 250,000 Venezuelans were offered TPS in 2021. Interesting that the socialists are the ones getting the most offers. And there you have it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
There you go. That's a lot of news for you in one Top 9 at 9, but that's kind of the way it's supposed to roll. We're going to be asking Jim Jordan about some of that news in just a little bit, along with a huge week for the FISA hearings as well. As we know that 278,000 Americans have been stalked and been essentially surveilled without warrants, violation of their constitutional rights. That stuff is coming to the Judiciary Committee, the very big hearing coming up this week. We'll talk to Jim Jordan about that. But you're probably thinking to yourself right now, it's 9:23, counting down the seconds, the minutes, until the lights go out. Are you hyperventilating? Are you panting? Because at the end of the day, what I said in number one on the top 9 and 9 is true. It's going to get dark for a few minutes. Then it's not going to be dark anymore. Are you going to remember it tomorrow? I'm not trying to be a smart aleck about it. I guess I am, but I'm not really trying to be rude about it. All right, I guess I am, but I mean, honestly, I get it. It's something that doesn't happen often. It's a celestial event that makes it interesting, and I'm interested in that sort of thing. It makes it a it's not really a once-in-a-lifetime thing because they just had one, about 17 years ago? It wasn't right over northeast Ohio with the path, what do they call it? The path of full, Seth, what do they call it? Full
totality.
Full what?
Totality.
Totality, yeah. Full totality of the eclipse. But all I do know is that it has closed schools. It has closed businesses. It is going to snarl traffic for days. And I mean, not literally days, but it's going to feel that way. I know this. The last time they had one, which was like 17 years ago or something like that, where it was a full total solar eclipse, it was best visible from down in the Nashville area or somewhere in Tennessee. And everybody did what they're doing to Northeast Ohio today. They just drove to that area from all over the country by the hundreds of thousands of cars. And I know this because of a firsthand account from my wife, one of my wife's good friends. They were actually in Tennessee, not for said solar eclipse, but they were in Tennessee on a Gatlinburg vacation. And their seven-hour drive from Tennessee back up to Northeast Ohio, because of the eclipse traffic, took them not 7, not 9, not 10, not 12, not 15, but 19 hours because of bumper-to-bumper traffic, all so people could watch it go from light to dark and back to light again. I am not a fan, and I'm sorry to say that. I think it's cool. I will go outside today. I have those glasses. My wife brought some from someplace, from work, I guess, or whatever it was. And I'll look up. And I promise you, I will not remember it tomorrow. Seth, am I just missing too casually something that is monumentally important?
Oh, I'm on the same boat as you. I mean, there was no traffic on the road today when I came into work. Nothing.
Yeah, because everybody closed.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And but then they're all gonna go out, and I guess they're doing something at the Rock Hall, right?
Well, yeah, they're doing something everywhere. But yeah, at the Rock Hall, they got something going on at the Science Center down there, and it is nuts. Some of these news stations are doing like all day coverage.
How can you cover something that isn't happening until 3 o'clock? What are they covering?
And it'll last for 4 minutes.
Yeah, right. On a cloudy day.
It's like my love life. It's going to be over so quick before it even starts. I may not make it outside by the time the eclipse actually happens.
Oh, my gosh. No, you're right. But if that's true, it's only because you didn't put the springs on the stick yet.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a time out here. We got a bottom of the hour. Yeah, I mean, by the way, we'll take calls today. If you want to talk about the great big celestial event and how it's going to get dark for a few minutes, it's fine. If you're excited about it, too, tell me how stupid I am for not being equally excited. I literally will take that. But for now, I'm just irritated by it because I know what it's going to do to traffic, especially since I've got a kid who's going to be driving in it, either right before the eclipse or right after the eclipse. And nonetheless, it's going to take a two-hour drive and make it an eight-hour drive or worse. So, yeah, we'll talk about it. But I've got Jim Jordan coming up here. Maybe I'll ask him about it, too. What the hell? Stay here. It's Always Right Radio, AM 1420.
Answer.
Okay, 36 minutes past the hour. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. It's a big week this week for FISA. It's a big week this week for RISA, Reforming Intelligence and Securing America Act. That's what they're calling this one. And the House Intelligence Committee Chair Mike Turner says we need to pass this thing.
This is surveillance of foreigners who are abroad. We're not surveilling foreigners in the United States. We're not surveilling Americans in the United States. Those individuals who say that this is a warrantless search of Americans' data are just not telling the truth. These are foreigners abroad. They're a select group of individuals who are a national security threat. If you're an American and you're corresponding with ISIS, yes, if we're spying on ISIS, your communications are going to be captured.
Mike Turner makes it sound like a no-brainer. Let's pass this thing. Let's find out what Congressman Jim Jordan, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, thinks about it. Congressman Jordan, good to have you back. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, Bob. Good to be with you today.
Okay, so big week this week. We're talking about voting on the reforming of the FISA Act. What is your view? What do you think of what Mike Turner said?
Well, the way this is now scheduled to play out, the base text is pretty good. It's got some requirements and reforms in there that the FBI has to now do, better reporting, more rules that they have to abide by themselves. But we got to remember, this is the FBI having to kind of police themselves, the same FBI that spied on President Trump's campaign, the same FBI that raided President Trump's home, the same FBI that said, if you're a mom and dad showing up at a school board meeting, you need to be investigated. Same FBI that had a memorandum in the Richmond field office that if you're pro-life Catholic, you're an extremist. And maybe most importantly, the same FBI that retaliated against the very people who told us about some of those things I just described. So I don't know that just requiring the FBI to make certain changes in how they implement FISA and do FISA is good enough. So what we have is an amendment which will say, if you are going to use Bob Francis' phone number or Bob Francis' email, and you're going to query what I call the haystack of information, if you're going to do that, we think you should go to a judge and get a warrant. And we even have exceptions in the language which says, okay, if it's exigent circumstances, emergent circumstances, you can go right to the query. But if not, you've got to go get a warrant. After all, that's how our constitutional system works, is there's a separate and equal branch of government who's supposed to provide the check to protect your liberty. And that will be a big fight this week. We think, though, that amendment has to be adopted in order to safeguard an agency that was caught 272,000 times querying this database in a manner that they weren't supposed to do. So that is the bottom line for so many of us. And that's why this bill came out of committee in such a strong fashion.
What is your feeling on the passage of that amendment? What kind of support do you have?
We had great support in committee. And what's interesting is bipartisan support. I mean, you had, you know, we talk about this all the time, Bob. There's a lot of times where Jerry Nadler and Jim Jordan aren't on the same page. But on this particular legislation, we were, because deep down people know that if you're messing with Americans' rights, there's got to be a warrant requirement. That's in our Constitution. So it came out of committee 35-2. Was the vote. We think we have a good chance of winning that amendment. Let's hope that we do, because we think that's the kind of protection that is, you know, consistent with our Constitution and needs to happen in this situation.
Just to go back to what Turner said in the clip that I played, you know, he said that to Jake Tapper yesterday. He's saying that this has nothing to do with Americans and it has nothing to do with American soil. It is only spying on foreigners on foreign soil, and that the concerns that you're raising right now about Bob France, if they use this, that, or the other, they need to get a warrant. He's saying they're not valid.
Well, then why would he be opposed to the warrant if in fact we're going to search? Why are they opposed to the warrant? I mean, that's sort of like it can't be both ways. It's like, oh, there's not an issue here. You don't have to worry about it. Okay, fine. You're just looking at, we want them to look at foreigners. Of course we want them to look at foreigners. But the inspector general himself said that 272,000 times they looked at Americans, they used American identifiers to search the database in a way that was consistent with their own rules. So think about it. If they couldn't follow their own rules then, putting new rules on them that are now better, are they going to follow them now, particularly in light of the history, the recent history of the FBI? So what we're saying is, look, go to a separate and equal branch of government, just like our founding fathers set up in this greatest country ever with the greatest constitutional system ever. Follow the Constitution. That's all we're saying.
Yeah, and
they're
all
opposed to that, which is scary you.
It does. And, you know, it's funny, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is, you know, running third party candidacy, said something yesterday, or at least I found this today. I think it was from yesterday. He said, I've been around long enough to that I question everything that the government tells me. And I think people who don't question what the government tells them are not paying attention. Now, I think he was responding to a question about conspiracy theories. But I want to apply what he said to what you just said about the FBI. I don't trust the government. I think more and more Americans do not trust the government when the FBI, which has been weaponized the way that it has, when the Department of Justice, which has been weaponized in the way that it has, bigger picture, when they have done the things that they have done and they have sacrificed any benefit of the doubt, I feel like we should not trust the government, and everything should get a warrant. Everything, every action they want to do should go through a court. I don't even know if I would trust the courts then, Congressman.
Well, look, I agree with that sentiment. But our system is, you know, we got to trust the courts, because it's something, our system is set up with, you know, three separate equal branches of government and the checks and the balances. And it's, you know, we're human beings. No one is perfect. So it's never perfect. But it's, what did Churchill say? It's the you know, democracy is the worst form of government there is, except for all the others.
I would say
our constitutional system is the best form. It's better than the parliamentary system and everything else you see in other countries. It is the best system because you do have those separate and equal branches of government providing the checks and the balances and the best chance to make sure liberty, freedom is protected. And so this is the best we can do. Let's go do it and recognize that is our best way to protect the freedoms that, you know, the freedoms that our founders understood came from the good Lord, not from government, but government's job is, in fact, to protect them.
No, you're right, obviously. And ordinarily, I would not, you know, besmirch the integrity of the courts in such a way, except for look at all of the judges and the prosecutors who are what they're doing to President Trump. I mean, honestly, I don't know whom I can trust anymore. in my government, any of the three, quite frankly, of the three equal branches. But that's just, that's just me. All right. President Trump yesterday made a big announcement on abortion policy. A lot of people felt like he was going to be pushing, and a lot of conservatives were pushing for a national abortion ban, which, of course, would make no sense. They got Roe v. Wade thrown out so that it could revert back to the states, and some said they wanted to then federalize it. President Trump made it very clear in that video announcement this morning, no, it should be states' rights and the, and up to the people, either by way of a vote or by legislation, to make the make their own abortion restrictions. What is your thoughts on what the president said?
Here we are again. That's the Constitution. That's how our system works. And it, it's Constitution. Look, you and I are pro-life. We think that, that life is sacred. Life is precious. We should protect it. We understand that the radical position on the life issue is the position that Democrats have taken. They think you should be able to take the life of an unborn child right up until their birthday. They actually think, in some cases, according to their governor, former Democrat governor of Virginia, you could even take the life of an unborn child after they're born. So not an unborn child, but a kid, a human being, obviously. So they're the ones who have the radical position. We're the ones who say, look, we want to protect human life. And we want to let that decision be made by the states. That's how our Constitution works. That's what the Supreme Court has ruled. I think that is entirely consistent with, again, our Constitution and a party who respects the sacredness and the sanctity of human life.
I do, too. But you know, this is where I get worried, because we're getting slaughtered in state after state after state. You know, and we wanted this to go to states' right, or states to make up their own minds. And I agree with that. But we're losing. It's a losing fight for us. That's why so many people feel like the Democrats are going to, you know, feature abortion as the, you know, near the very top of their platform in this whole fight between now and November, because they're beating us. They beat us. They beat the heck out of us here in a red state of Ohio. What, by 13 points, they allowed abortion up on demand up until the moment of birth.
Yeah, I mean, one, they're going to talk about it because, frankly, they got nothing else to talk about. Are they going to talk about a border that's not secure? Are they going to talk about record crime? Are they going to talk about, you know, record high inflation? Are they going to talk about the foreign policy? I mean, what else are they going to talk about? So they do that. But I think, again, campaigns, both sides gets to speak, and they're gonna say their things. We're gonna talk about what we think is important to voters, and we're gonna have a campaign. I think we're gonna win. There's a reason that Joe Biden is saying all the terrible things he's saying about our dearest and closest friend, the state of Israel, because he's getting his tail kicked in the state of Michigan right now in polls. And maybe more importantly, President Trump's winning in all seven of the swing states, the states that decide the presidential election. He's up in Georgia, Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada, and Arizona. So they're the ones right now, I think, who are looking at the polling situation saying, wow, maybe we're not in touch with where the American people are on so many issues.
Yeah, well, I agree that 100%. They are out of touch, and I think that is going to benefit us. And I'm glad you brought up Israel, because we just marked, obviously, the six-month moment on April 7th since the 10/7 atrocities. And Speaker Johnson issued a very, very strong statement, one that I was glad to read, in which he declared that it's time for the United States to stop dictating to Israel how they can defend themselves, stop with their criticism, and support them. That's what we're supposed to do, because guess what's happening in the United States, not just in Washington, D.C., but in places like Dearborn, Michigan. And you know about Dearborn,
right.
The population there. They held a rally there yesterday on the 5th, on Quds Day, in which there were people on American soil chanting death to Israel, death to America. This is something you usually hear chanted in the streets of Tehran. That's happening here in the United States, for crying out loud. There is no support for Israel from the United States, because so many people, and I believe Joe Biden is worried about those people chanting death to America voting for him in November.
I think that is so disgusting what's being done there and what's being chanted and said. But the fact that the President of the United States is criticizing our the Prime Minister of our dearest, saying to the state of Israel, you need a different Prime Minister, Chuck Schumer saying that, and the President of the United States saying what he said during the State of the Union about putting a temporary port, a pier in Gaza to supply the enemy of our ally and friend Israel makes no sense. But I think, again, it's driven by the political situation in a state that they have to win to win the presidency. They're convinced they have to win Michigan. And they're not right now. What we should do is put the Israel aid package on the floor now. just for Israel. We should put that on the floor and pass it and see what Chuck Schumer does then. See what Joe Biden does then, because that will have bipartisan support. It will have strong support from Republicans, and there will be several Democrats who will vote for that. We should put that on the floor, pass it, send it to the Senate, and say, there's money to help Israel in this terrible situation, this tough situation they're in, fight terrorism. What are you going to do now, Senator Schumer? What are you going to do, President Biden? That's how we should handle this thing and show Israel that there are lots of people in our United States Congress who want to support it.
Can we have that vote on the House side?
We should have had it a long time ago. I've went directly to the speaker. I've spoken in front of the entire conference and said, let's put it on the floor. I wanted to do it 2 weeks ago, right after Chuck Schumer's comments relative to Prime Minister Netanyahu. Put it on the floor then.
And what has Speaker Johnson said in response?
I don't know. I don't know if he's looking at the Ukraine aid. I don't know. It makes no sense to me why we wouldn't just put that clean bill on the floor and pass it. And then let the American people say to Chuck Schumer, why won't you call this up and help our best ally, our best friend, the state of Israel? Why won't you do that? And, oh, Joe Biden, we don't care if you threaten to veto it. Here's the bill. What are you going to do?
Yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. But it's hard for us to throw stones at Chuck Schumer if he doesn't bring it up on the Senate side, if we can't get our Republican speaker to bring it up on the House side.
That's
the reason I asked what his response has been, because nobody is leading on this issue. And I agree with you 100%. You mentioned a moment ago, Congressman Jordan, that President Biden doesn't have anything else to run on. What is he going to run on? Well, you're right about that. And here's evidence. More vote purchases on the way. Another student loan bailout plan is going to be announced in Wisconsin today. It's going to impact up to 30 million Americans. He is just literally flipping off the United States Supreme Court. They said, you cannot do this. This will be about the, I don't know, eighth or ninth time that he has done this since the court made that ruling that this is unconstitutional. This one is going to cut up to $20,000 in accrued interest on borrowers who make less than $120,000. And, you know, the details don't even matter, but the fact is all of this is going to hit before November, according to the Wall Street Journal. This would take effect before November, and that, how is that in any way, shape, or form not buying votes from grateful Americans who are going to say, no, Joe Biden just saved me $20,000?
No, it'd be laughable if it wasn't so serious. It'd be laughable if it wasn't so unfair to the families who worked hard and paid for their son or daughter's education, or the individual who paid for his own education, or who went to a trade school, who started their own business, or what? It would be laughable if it wasn't so unfair and so wrong. This is today's Democrat Party. I mean, it's sad. And again, not all Democrats are that way, but the left that controls their party seems to me to be ridiculous in so many ways. So, here we go again, as you pointed out, Bob. I still don't think it's going to be enough. I mean, I was asked by a reporter, it's a few weeks back, and I'm walking to go vote, and the reporter asked me, President or Congressman, you've been critical of the president. Is there anything good that the president's done? And I literally thought about it for a second. I mean, I tried to give it a fair shake. And I stood there and I thought for it, and I'm like, no, I can't think of anything positive that really has happened with this administration. You look at any public policy area, you look at respect around the world, you look at anything, and it's just like, so I think in the end, they're going to lose, and President Trump's going to be our next president. I think we're going to win the Senate. We got a great candidate in our state, in Bernie Moreno, and I think we're going to keep the House, and then it'll be incumbent upon us to get things done that actually benefit families and communities in our country.
You know, that's an astounding statement you just made, and I can't disagree with it. If I sat here and thought about every policy, and if I think about energy, I think about inflation, I think about economic issues, I think about border, I think about crime, I think about foreign policy, you try to find me something he did that I would say, yes, I agreed with that. I can't find anything good that he has done. And maybe that's why, and I'll close with this, on the 25th, I think, 28th, whatever it was, they held that massive superstar-laden event for Joe Biden with Obama on his side and Clinton's on his other side, and some of the heaviest of heavyweights in the celebrity world were there, and he made $26 million. President Trump holds an event in Palm Beach where it's just him, nobody else, just he's the name, he's the star, and raised $50 million. That's a pretty good sign, isn't it?
It sure is. I actually talked to the president briefly on the phone yesterday, and said, $50 million, that's unbelievable, to double what they did in New York, where the left made a big thing about that. You know,
yeah,
like
they
you
did.
You got three presidents call coming to New York, and you had all the Hollywood celebrity or whatever it was, the entertainment, whatever they had there. And you're like, wow, that's it wasn't, you know, when they told you, like, wow, that's a lot of money. That's big. That is a big thing. But to double it, just here, what, a week and a half later, 2 weeks later, was just, it was just good to see. So I think another good sign for the Republicans this year.
A little bit of inspiration there to take away from that in the midst of all of this darkness. Oh, by the way, what are you going to do for darkness? 4 hours of 4 minutes of darkness, I should say, this afternoon. You going outside to look up?
Interestingly enough, Bob, we'll be flying. We're in California. It's like 6-something in the morning here, and we're heading to the airport to fly back to D.C. So we'll be in the air when you guys are all watching the eclipse. So. But maybe we'll see something from the plane. I don't know how that works in the plane. But,
well, I hope you guys don't accidentally run into the sun, because it's going to be dark. I won't be able to see it anymore. So
there we go.
Congressman, thank you for the great analysis. I didn't realize you were on California time this morning. Sorry about that, but thank you for sticking with us. Appreciate you.
All right, you bet. We'll see you.
All right. Thank you, sir. There you go. That's Jim Jordan on AM 1420 The Answer. He's on Pacific time today. I did not know that. Yeah, I mean, that'd be crazy to be in the air when the sun goes black. I mean, how the plane's going to know where to go? Okay, we'll take a time out here. It's Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
Yes, indeed it is. Exactly that. 6 minutes after 10 o'clock, 6 minutes and closer to darkness. Ooh, it's going to be dark today for like 4 whole minutes. Then it's going to be normal again today. Are you excited about the eclipse? And I'm being really a jerk about this. I fully admit it. I know a lot of people are like, it's a once-in-a-lifetime. It is. Yeah, it is, and it will be. And I promise you, you will not remember that once-in-a-lifetime thing by tomorrow at the same hour. Because it's going to come, and it's going to go, and that's going to be it. And it's not going to be anything you really think about ever again. But nonetheless, people are excited about it, so go have fun. I just hope you're not planning on going anywhere near downtown. Between what they're doing at the Rock Hall, some big, massive eclipse party. They're DJing the eclipse in. what they're doing at the Great Lakes Science Center, which, of course, makes sense. It's a scientific sitch. And then the fact that, there's the baseball game today. The Indians home opener is right after the eclipse at like 5 o'clock. And so it's going to be nuts, absolutely nuts, trying to get around town today if you're going downtown. So good luck to you on all of that. Okay, let's see. Here's what I want to talk about now. I'm looking at a website called United. Well, it's actually called UniteForFreedom.com. Unite, then the number 4Freedom.com. It is the website of the United Sovereign Americans. And I got to tell you, when I first heard about Sovereign Americans, I thought, this is problematic, because I have seen enough videos on the platforms, you know, on Snapchat and Instagram and all of these things, of what people are identify themselves as sovereign Americans giving cops a hard time whenever they get pulled over for not having driver's licenses or license plates, I should say, or this, that, or the other thing. The laws don't apply to me. I'm a sovereign citizen, and they're all a bunch of jerks, at least in the videos. So I kind of thought this isn't going to be somebody I want to be associated with, but apparently it is a little bit different here. The United Sovereign Americans organization is fighting also for election integrity, which is extraordinarily important here in this election year. This is a nonpartisan informational meeting that is going to be held, ensuring that Ohio and America has consistently clean elections. It's happening in Medina. And it's happening on Wednesday. And joining us now to talk about it is one of the representatives of the United Sovereign Americans. So let's welcome Marley Hornick to the program. Marley, thank you for coming on. How are you?
Thanks, Bob. I'm great. Thanks for having us on. And
you bet.
I just want to clarify that United Sovereign Americans has absolutely nothing to do with the sovereign citizen movement other than the word sovereignty, which
yeah,
is
right.
a really important word from our founding. So please don't confound us. I understand the impulse, but we're really very different.
I was so glad to when I went to your website, I was looking for anything that would indicate a link between the two, and I found nothing. That's the reason I was looking at the site long before you came on. I wanted to find out, or clarify and confirm, because I know anybody who would be working to make sure that America's elections and Ohio's elections are secure and fair and free would not be somebody that is bucking the traditional American system of law and order, which is what those individuals do. So
we want to restore it. We want to be Americans, and everybody who loves this country should be joining us. And I'm just thrilled that you're having us on this morning. Thank you, Bob.
Well, you know, I'm going to give credit to my friend Tom Zawistowski of the We the People Convention, because he told me about this meeting that was coming up on Wednesday. And I said, absolutely, because I think anybody who cares about this country, as you just proclaimed that you and the organization do, you know, win, lose, or draw, we need the elections to be fair. We need them to be trustworthy. We need whatever happens in November to be something we can count on that was truly the will of the people. And I say that really not wanting to include the lose part of that. I don't want to lose.
Right.
But if I am going to lose, it's got to be on the up and up, and not, you know, not by way of fraud or not by way of having so many irregularities and questions, right? That's what we have to stop from happening.
That's the issue, and that's been the issue since the American founding. Everybody needs to remember that the founders had to argue very carefully and articulately in the Federalist Papers about the idea that there would always be factions. If you're going to have a system that's not run by a monarchy or by any kind of particular tyrant, tyrannical overlord, and you really want the people to have the say, there's always going to be adversaries. It's inherent in the system. It's not mean to say that. So the only way to keep the peace under the treaty, you could say, the adversarial treaty called the United States Constitution, is to make sure the elections are dead accurate. And that's the only job election officials have. So when United Sovereign Americans, for example, in Ohio, discovered that at the time your midterm, your 2022 midterm was certified, there were 1.2 million registration violations in your voter roll database, responsible for casting 600,000 votes in your midterm. The question is not, you know, are these clerical errors? The question is, was your database breached? Were any of these adversarial parties unlawfully given an advantage over the voice and the will of the American people who live in Ohio?
That's an extraordinarily important question, and it's really frightening to think that it can be, but we do know that it can be. We're talking with Marlee Hornick. She's the CEO of United Sovereign Americans, and there is a big meeting that is coming up in Medina, hosted by Ohio Freedom Fighters on Wednesday. We'll tell you more about that at the conclusion of this, but Marlee, in what ways can the databases be breached? Because that is very clearly the most important and terrifying issue here, is if those can be. It's kind of like the actual voter machines being manipulated and having votes changed after they're cast. But when it comes to the registration of voters, if the databases are not valid, then the election is not valid.
That's correct, because an election fundamentally contains three elements. It contains voters, votes, and count. So if you're starting out with a corrupted voter list, your votes are corrupted and your counts are corrupted. Now, how did this happen? I don't know. And I have lots of theories. There are many state laws in Ohio and other states that appear to undermine the validity of our constitutional basis for representative government. However, the issue is not, you know, let's have an investigation and let's figure out how this happened. The issue is let's take this to court and let a judge decide if this looks like the same thing as what the Constitution requires. Because the outcome of this for Ohio is that your midterm was certified as accurate and legally compliant with a 17% voting error rate. When did you file your taxes with a 17% financial error rate and the IRS didn't come down on you? And here we are talking about the most important function of our entire system of government. If we don't have government by consent, we could be ruled by imposters. there could be adversarial interests at play in our houses of legislation, in our executive branch, or in our judiciary, who are not acting in concert with their duty as servants of the people. So this couldn't be more important to get fixed. And our meeting on Wednesday is going to be, you know, going into these findings in depth and also getting people involved, because if we don't stop this, the American people, you see, are the only ones who don't have a conflict of interest in the matter, right? We're not paid to administer the system as it is, and we're not the political beneficiaries of an election that may not have been accurately certified.
That's very
the
well
problem
said.
Is, mm-hmm. Yeah, and nobody well, knows.
What I was about to say, too, Marley, is I love the comparison between taxes. You're exactly right. If there was a 17% discrepancy, the IRS isn't going to be like, yeah, don't worry about it. There's going to be hell to pay. And so why are we not looking at this when it's the most important function that we have of our government? I completely concur. And I want to emphasize something here, too, Marley, on one of the informational flyers that Tom sent me. This is nonpartisan. This is going to sound like it's a big conservative festival. It's not. As I said before in my little quip about win, lose, or draw, we have to, and I'm going to read the flyer. This is a nonpartisan informational meeting about ensuring Ohio and America has consistently clean elections. It doesn't matter if Democrats or Republicans win as long as they are all clean. And so people need to know that this isn't going to be a conservative rally on Wednesday in Medina. This is going to be for all people interested in free and fair elections, right?
That's correct. And the reason that's so important is because anytime we allow our system to be overtaken by one particular interest, that is in, let's say their representation becomes greater than what is warranted according to the number of people who support those policies, anytime we allow that to happen, we put the people, we put ourselves and our future and our children at risk. We are supposed to be the ones in charge of this system. We're supposed to be pulling the strings by determining who we authorize to legislate on our behalf. And if anyone is allowed the opportunity to leverage that system for a private benefit, there's a risk. So we have to decide, you know what, we may not agree with every one of our neighbors, but if we have a fair election, then we're not going to end up with these radical policies that clearly cannot represent the will of the majority. They just can't. They're so outrageous. Find someone who really believes in some of these radical policies. You can't, not even in New York.
So since we're talking elections, Marley, I have to ask, I mean, what is the role of the Secretary of State's office in this? Do you have communications? Does your organization meet with Secretary LaRose, or how does that all play?
That's a great question. Our researchers in Ohio sought to have an open conversation with Secretary LaRose. They submitted an official report of every single one of our findings. So, for example, inside of the Ohio voter roll database, at the time your midterm was certified, there were 3,400 people who voted in your election whose date of birth changes from one copy of the database to another. There were 18,000 people who voted whose vote was edited at some point in their voter history. There were 63,000 people who voted whose registration date was altered backwards, comparing database copies. So these are not issues of voter roll maintenance, where you have people moving and the registration records are supposed to be updated in a timely fashion. These demonstrate invalid identities. They have to be proven. I mean, whose birth date changes, that's a real living, breathing human being. So the question we posed to Frank LaRose, you know, respectfully and asking for cooperation and support to try to fix these serious issues, was to present all of these records to him and present to him the actual computer programming code that we use to extract these records from the Ohio State Voter Roll Database. Now, Frank LaRose, Secretary LaRose, is responsible under federal law as the chief election official of Ohio to make sure everything that takes place in Ohio elections comports with the law. Unfortunately, I want to say that his response, or his office's official response to our findings and our report from their data, was that these look like clerical errors, and it's probably due to short staffing at the boards of elections. Now, if they're clerical errors, we'll go away. But 1.2 million clerical errors is not something you wave a wand and it just vanishes. It has to be investigated. Because if he can't explain how these got there, how people's birth dates are changing inside the Ohio State Voter Roll Database, then a criminal investigation is required. If he doesn't want to participate, then the people are going to have to get him out of the way, because our country is at stake. It's not personal, but we have to know our elections are correct.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And we're talking, if you just turned on the radio, we're talking with Marlee Hornick. She is the CEO of United Sovereign Americans. And she and they are working very, very hard to inform the public about what it takes to actually hold a valid election, what a valid election actually looks like. One thing you just said in that last commentary, Marlee, is you said a certain number of people had their votes edited at some point. I've never heard that term before. I think of editing something, and I think of changing something. What did you mean by that?
I mean that when you look at the voter roll database, in one instance, a person, a unique registrant, has a certain voting history. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at it later in time, that voter history is changed in ways that are inexplicable. So it's not that new votes are added based on, you know, a more modern election has taken place that they participated in. It's that their previous votes have been deleted, or another vote has been added that didn't exist. There's a lot of editing. This is not unique to Ohio. I just want to say, in New York's 2020 general election, we discover that the State Board of Elections continues to edit the vote. So here's an example. In 2021, the State Board of Elections showed 109 unique voters who double voted in the 2020 election by injecting a ballot from two different entry points. So they voted in person, and they also voted absentee, say. Now, in 2023, we're still talking about the 2020 election. All of a sudden, you know how many there are? There's 226,000 people who double voted in the 2020 election by injecting a ballot from two different entry points. Who edits the vote after certification by a quarter of a million votes? That's New York, but it's happening in Ohio. It's happening in California. It's happening in Texas. It's happening in Florida. Everywhere we look, we see the votes being edited after certification. That's not right. That's called cooking the books.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like. Yeah, and I'm glad to get that clarification, because I misunderstood. I thought it meant specifically editing votes, as in like a yay or a nay, or a vote for a candidate or against a candidate, or whatever the case might be. Excuse me, not adding votes or subtracting votes based on person's voting history.
Let me just pop in on that quickly. I know you got something else, but let me just pop in on that, because the key takeaway here is not that United Sovereign Americans volunteers working in all these states have discovered who did win any election. The issue is they're editing. No one knows what the impact is. No one knows if it's material, but the numbers are material. The issue is no one actually knows who won any of these elections. I can't tell you, neither can Secretary LaRose. Neither can the New York State Board of Elections or any of these other officials. And we don't know why. How can you base a nation off of, you know, a million questions in Ohio, 5 million questions in New York, 4 million questions in Illinois? That's not our country. We have to fix this.
Completely agree. Again, Marlee Hornick is my guest, CEO of United Sovereign Americans. Your mission statement says, and I'm going to read it, United Sovereign Americans fulfills its educational purpose through litigation, forensic investigations, and public outreach. United Sovereign Americans is dedicated to protecting the citizens of America by assuring transparent, unwaveringly lawful, and trustworthy elections. The right of citizens to freely choose our representatives guarantees that our government upholds our will and serves by consent. Our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness are secured by the law. United Sovereign Americans is particularly committed to ensuring fidelity to the law. As it relates to elections and voting, United Sovereign Americans is at the ready to guard the validity of elections through education and litigation. That's a lot, and that is all extraordinarily important. What I want to know is, when somebody comes to see you in Medina and be a part of this on Wednesday, what can they expect? What are they there for? How can they help?
Well, the first thing they'll have the opportunity to do, if they're not familiar with how the Constitution protects our vote and how the Constitution and the 14th Amendment grant us these sacred rights, we'll go over that as an overview, and we'll talk more about the Ohio data specifically. Then we're going to talk about how people can help. We're going to talk about our resolution process, which is a process whereby every citizen in Ohio can come and use the facts and findings extracted from the Secretary of State's own data about your election in 2022 to get officials and civic organizations, everybody across your state, organized and ready to protect the vote, to pass a resolution for a valid 2024 election and explain to all other people who haven't had the privilege of hearing this information, what makes the federal election valid? What does the law say? The other thing we're going to be doing is helping everybody to get on board with giving us contributions so that we can file litigation in Ohio. This couldn't be more important because we are running out of time. We have 7 months to go to protect the 2024 election before it happens. These facts are already, I'm already in communications with attorneys in Ohio to get this filed, but we do need to be able to pay them. So we've done, at United Sovereign Americans as volunteers, we've put in millions of dollars worth of research, and we really need your support to make sure we get across the finish line. So those are some of the aspects we're going to be drawing people in to help us with and help us spread the word so that even if the folks in the room can't write a big check, maybe they know somebody who can, so that we can make sure we secure Ohio's election. Now, I do want to say we have already filed this litigation in Maryland. It's already live in Maryland, and we're about to go live in one other state. Hopefully I'll be able to announce that on Wednesday. We'll see. But the litigation basically asked the judge to rule and say, yes or no, a broken voting system is adequate to protect the civil rights of all of the residents of the United States of America in 2024. And it's a very simple lawsuit based on a single official document, the state voter roll database. So we do believe that by filing in federal court in all these different states, let's say the circuits disagree, what happens is it's forced to the Supreme Court immediately as an emergency litigative measure. They have to deal with it. They do not have discretion in that instance to say, this doesn't look like such a big hot button issue, and let's just move forward, let bygones be bygones.
Marley Hornick, I'm so happy to have you here to tell people about this. Most people have no clue. I didn't have a clue that you guys were out there working this hard on this until my friend Tom told me about it. So I want to give people the particulars now. The website is unite4freedom.com. The event in Medina is Wednesday, 7 p.m. Location, Marley, do you know?
It's with the Ohio Freedom Alliance.
I know Ohio Freedom Fighters are hosting the event. Yeah, I just didn't catch the location of this. But would that information be on the website on Unite for Freedom?
I am looking for it right now. I apologize.
It's okay.
I had
we've got
up
a
on my phone.
Not at all. Not at all. We've got a break coming here, so I'll find it or if you find it, let me know. I'll announce it on the other side of our news break here. But I just want people to be aware of it. It's coming up in Medina on Wednesday at 7 p.m. hosted by the Ohio Freedom Fighters, and the website again is unite4freedom.com. United Sovereign Americans pushing for true transparency and valid elections in Ohio and across the country. Marley, thank you for the work that you're doing, and thank you for sharing all of it with us.
Thanks, Bob. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, thank you so much. All right, 10:29 here. We'll take a timeout. I'll come back and give you that location as soon as I get it on Always Right Radio, AM 14.
The Answer.
Okay, it's 10:36. So just to clarify this for people who are wondering, hey, can I go to that American Sovereign event? The flyer gives an address that I looked up because it didn't give the name of the business or hall or, you know, auditorium or whatever the heck it's going to be. And so I looked up the address and it says it's a residential home. And I didn't want to give an address out to anybody for anybody that might be the wrong address. It's somebody's house. A bunch of people start showing up. That would be really, really bad. So I'll try to find that. I've already put out a few questions to people who should know where it is. I just don't have the answer yet. I'll give it to you as soon as I can. But if you're looking for more information, again, about the event itself and about the group, unite4freedom.com. Unite, the number 4, and freedom.com. We're talking about United Sovereign Americans. Okay. You know who is not united in sovereignty with the United States? Apparently, Dearborn Muslims. Dearborn Arab American Muslims. Dearborn, as in Michigan, sometimes known as the hotbed of hate. At what times? Well, at times like now. I'm not going to dwell for the next 30 minutes on Israel, the specifics of the Israel war of self-defense, because that's what they're doing. They're not aggressively trying to harm anyone except for Hamas, the terrorists who did what they did on October 7th. Obviously, we are 6 months yesterday, 6 months since the terrible attacks, and Israel is continuing to try to wipe out those who did it so they can't come back for more, which, of course, they have already pledged to do. I'm not going to spend all of this time talking about that. I'm going to spend this time asking how, and let me rephrase, how much should we as freedom-loving Americans be willing and forced to take when it comes to people in our country actively calling for the destruction of our country? There was a hearing on Capitol Hill. It was, 3 months ago now, I think, in which three university presidents, presidents of University of Pennsylvania, which is an Ivy League school, Harvard, an Ivy League school, and MIT, the foremost, university in the world for technology. And these three university presidents were being questioned by a congressional committee, and it was Elise Stefanik from New York who was the most aggressive in asking them whether or not it was appropriate or within their university's policies of or codes of student conduct to allow students to call for genocide. Is that okay for them to target individuals or groups with that sort of violent rhetoric, threats, and so forth? And they were talking about the fact that there were groups on each of their campuses that were routinely marching around campus, making Jewish students feel very, very unsafe as they chanted, "From the river to the sea, Palestine shall be free." That is a death to Israel chant. That is a death to Jews chant. They chanted some other things as well. And these university presidents were put on the spot. Two of them are no longer their university presidents because they refused to condemn the calls for the death of Jewish people, Jewish students, and Israelis, and the nation of Israel. They refused to say that was against their code of conduct. And I still submit to you that the reason they would not say it is because if they admitted that it was against their code of conduct, they would then have to punish those students. And they didn't want to punish their students because they did not disagree with those students who were chanting such things. The anti-Semitism that lives on those campuses was real. So why am I going back to that? I'm going back to that because those people were held accountable because they would not condemn and stop that those things from happening on their campuses. They were held accountable. Well, who should be held accountable when American citizens who are not students, but who are dedicated not to America, but to other countries and more specifically to their religion, one that is the law of the land in Muslim and Islamic theocracies like Iran, when they are in the United States calling for not just death to Jews, not just death to Israel, the way the idiots on those college campuses were, but they're calling death to us, the United States. They're calling for death upon the United States of America, as well as Israel. This is happening in real daylight time in front of cameras on Al-Quds Day. They were doing this up in Dearborn. And I want to know how these people, Michael Savage is the one who I think said it best. And I know he's not a Salem guy, but I don't care. I'm giving credit where it's due. But he's the one who said it best. Deport these people right now. During an Al-Quds Day rally in Dearborn, Michigan, on the last day of Ramadan, Muslim protesters chanted death to America and death to Israel. The event marked by speeches condemning Israel and America, with one speaker citing mass murderer Ayatollah Khomeini as an inspiration, has sparked widespread concern and discussion on social media. The rally was organized as a day of solidarity with Palestinians, who don't exist, and against the Israeli occupation of Jerusalem, which it is not. I'm joining with Savage, calling for deportation now. And I want to know what it's going to take. And I want to know, seriously, how much we can expect to tolerate and put up with. We can be expected to tolerate and put up with. They fired two university presidents because students on their campuses were chanting death to Israel and death to Jews. Who gets fired when they're doing this in the United States and saying death to Israel, death to America? And I'm not saying there's an answer about who should get fired, but I am saying that these individuals who are... and. By the way, it's not as if there aren't thousands, if not millions, of foreign nationals in the U.S. right now and who came here in the last 3 years of the Biden administration, almost 10 million of them in total, but we don't know how many of them, thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions, who are here and ready to carry that out. How many of them are here to carry out death to America? The enemy is already here. They're here in the form of radical Islamists from that region of the world, sponsored and supported financially by Iran. They're here in the form of Communist Chinese who have come by the tens of thousands across our borders illegally, over a 4,000% increase in Chinese illegal immigrants in the United States since Joe Biden took office in 2021. A 4,000% increase. What are they here for? What you're witnessing in action, my friends, is the red-green axis. The red-green axis, if you do not know, is the kind of the enemy of my enemy is my friend union between radical Islam and communism. Russian communists, Chinese communists, and radical Muslims and Islamists all working toward the same goal. What is that goal? End America. Destroy the West. Destroy Western civilization. Destroy capitalism. They're all working together. And we're allowing them to rally on American soil in the hotbed of hate that is Dearborn, Michigan, otherwise known as Dearbornistan. They're allowed to do this sort of thing. I'm failing to understand exactly how much we are supposed to endure and how much we're supposed to take.
We've been asked in the past, why are our protests on the International Day of Quds, why are they so anti-America? Why don't we just focus more on Israel and not talk so much about America? Gaza has shown the entire world why these protests are so anti-America. Because it's the United States government that provides the funds for all of the atrocities that we just heard about. And this is why Imam Khomeini, who declared the International Day of Quds, this is why he would say to pour all of your chants and all of your shouts upon the head of America. Malcolm X said, and I quote, "We live in one of the rottenest countries that has ever existed on this earth. It's not Genocide Joe that has to go. It's the entire system that has to go. Any system that would allow such atrocities and such devilry to happen and would support it, such a system does not deserve to exist on God's earth." And so when these fools ask us if Israel has the right to exist, the chant "Death to Israel" has become the most logical chant shouted across the world today. Imam Khomeini recognized that Israel is an evil settler colonialist project. He realized it is a cancer. And he established this day. Israel, before this, brothers and sisters, was a sacred cow. Nobody could criticize Israel. Everybody was terrified of being anti-Semitic. Everybody was afraid of them. But now, the people of conscience very openly will criticize Israel. They recognize Israel for what it is. Israel is ISIS. They are Nazis. They are fascists. They are racist. The people of the world now know this.
Free Palestine. From the river to the sea.
Palestine will be free.
You should know at the very tail end of that, they gave the microphone to a child. A very, very, very small young child. And they had that child who has clearly been brainwashed by the ideology of radical Islam and anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism and Jewish hate. They asked that child to lead the chant that calls for the death of Jews, the death of Israel. They joined that, or they added to that call with "death to America, death to America, death to America" three times. You heard it. So why do I bring this up? I bring this up for the two reasons I just mentioned. They're praising the Ayatollah Khomeini, a mass murderer. They're praising those who call the United States the most rotten place on earth, saying it does not deserve to exist on God's earth, saying that Israel does not deserve to exist on God's earth, saying that Israel is the nation of devilry. Israelis are Nazis. Now I'm going to let that one marinate for a moment. The Jewish people were nearly exterminated as a race by Nazis from 1939 to 1945. That's why in 1948, they were allowed to basically reconstitute themselves and go back to their absolute native historic homeland of Israel, because they were essentially driven out of Europe. So they go to actually their homeland in 1948. And now they are called Nazis, the people that literally destroyed all of their families, that tortured and murdered so many. They're called Nazis. They're the ones who are called colonials. They're the ones who are called, you know, the invaders for daring to go back to their historic homeland. It is so upside down. And this type of call is allowed on American soil. Death to America, death to Israel. By the way, it's not just the young military age males chanting this at the beginning, which you heard at the beginning. Then it was the older generations. It looked like a senior who was talking about Malcolm X and Ayatollah Khomeini and so forth. Then it was the youngest generations, a young child, all chanting and saying the same things. So that's which brings me to point number two. First of all, these individuals should not be allowed in the United States. They should not be allowed in the United States. They are actively calling for violence and death upon Americans, death upon America. That, to me, should be enough to either lock them up or kick them out. Number two is, this is evidence of the fact that I believe there are no innocents in Gaza. There are no innocent individuals in Gaza. And first you might say, and I have said this too, except for the children, they don't know what they're doing. And it's true, they don't know what they're doing. It's true, they are being indoctrinated. It's true, they are being taught to hate Jews and Americans. So it's not their fault. So in that manner of speaking, yes, they are innocents. But as you saw or heard as I played for you in this video, when they have the kids leading the chants to kill Jews, and the kids do so, not reluctantly, but excitedly, screaming it out loud. From the river to the sea, Palestine shall be free. Screaming it. Then what you have, they're not innocent children, they're future Hamas terrorists. And I'm not saying we should kill them, because they are going to simply grow into Hamas terrorists. I've said this before. There are only three types of people in Gaza. There is Hamas. There are family members and supporters of Hamas. And then there are future Hamas, which are the kids. That's it. That's all that lives in Gaza, which means there are no innocent civilians there. And I'm not suggesting, again, that there should be any targeting of kids because they are future Hamas. But what I am also saying is there should not be one more Jewish or Israeli life taken because they did not go after Hamas for fear of collateral damage with even the young future Hamas children that live in Gaza. Let me put it another way. If Hamas truly wants to protect their quote-unquote innocent children in Gaza, they will lay down their arms. They will release their hostages. They will turn themselves into IDF forces for trials. And then guess what? IDF forces withdraw. Not one more life has to be lost. Not one more collateral damage victim has to be claimed by the Israeli defensive exercises. I will always call them that. That's what they're doing, is defending themselves. They're not on an offensive. They're certainly not committing a genocide. If Hamas wants children to live, if they want their seniors to live, if they want their civilians to live, they will lay down their arms and they will allow Israel to withdraw peacefully with Hamas being destroyed and never allowed to again attack Israel, which is what should happen. But the reality of this, my friends, is you may not know exactly how committed they are to martyrdom. In their warped, disturbed, deluded, theocratic minds, the radical Islamist says the more Islamic lives or Muslim lives that are taken and going to heaven as martyrs, the better the cause is here on earth. The more of them that are killed, the more the blame will fall on Israel. And the more blame that falls on Israel, the closer we are to having a more united consensus among the rest of the world's nations, the United Nations itself, into agreeing with us that, yeah, Israel's got to go. They're trying to gin up anti-Israel hatred, as well as anti-American hatred. So they would rather have more kids die, rather have more women die, rather have more senior citizens die. The more of them that die, even if it is Hamas's fault, the better things are for Hamas. That's why they'll starve them out as well. No matter how much humanitarian aid and food and medicine arrives in Gaza, it's confiscated by the Hamas leaders. They would rather starve their people out, show them on video starving, and then have everybody in the world blame Israel. It's all a part of their tactic. This has got to stop. Speaker Mike Johnson was spot on when he said it is time to stop lecturing Israel on how it should best defend itself and begin equipping them with all of the resources necessary to eliminate the threat of Hamas once and for all. Speaker Johnson, spot on. Now we need to address that first part. How do we get these anti-American terrorist supporters out of our country?
Well, we're noticing.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on AM 1420, The Answer.
Indeed it is, and hour number three is now underway at 8 minutes past 11 o'clock. Closer and closer to the rapture we creep, according to some really, really wild, whacked out people. It is the eighth morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. 3:08, so we're what now, officially 4 hours away? 4 hours away from it going from light to dark. But good news, it'll then go from dark to light, and we'll get on with our regular lives. Seth, I asked you before, you said you're not too, like, terribly excited about this, but then I also saw that on the Seth Williams podcast, you are planning to talk about this for an hour.
No, not for an hour. No way.
No?
No.
Okay.
No,
but you have your glasses, I noticed.
I do have the glasses.
Which by the way, I'm impressed that they do look more male than your last pair of glasses.
Yeah, I'm wearing the women's now, but earlier I was wearing the blacked out ones. And how are you going to find the sun in those things? Completely blacked out, can't see anything.
That's kind of the point. It should be black so you don't burn your retinas, for crying out loud. That's what they say.
But you can't see the sun then.
I mean, I'm gonna go out and look at it, and then I'm gonna be like, okay, that was cool, and I'm gonna be done with it. I don't understand. I'm not driving 20 miles out of my way, much less 200, much less 1,000 miles out of my way to go into the path of totality, which is what so many other people are doing today. I don't understand that because they will forget it. It will, and even if they videotape it, and there's certain lenses, I guess, that you can get for your smartphone to videotape the actual thing happening, and that's fine. Again, what are you going to do with that? You going to watch it later? You going to watch it next week? You going to watch it 2 weeks from now or a year from now and say, look at that. Look what happened. There was we know what a solar eclipse is. I'm just failing to see the overwhelming attention that is being paid to it. It's going to be cool and done.
I talked to one guy yesterday who said he doesn't believe in conspiracy theories, and so he's going to look directly at it. Said that nothing will happen to him. He said it's a conspiracy theory to wear these glasses.
Okay. Well, then I just that's just stupid. That's just stupid. That's one thing I do not think is a conspiracy theory. I think eyes are limited in what they can do, and staring at super bright things will burn them out. Yes. I don't think that would be a wise thing to do. Some people don't think that you're going to be able to see any sun. I thought it was totality. I thought the whole sun was blocked out by the Earth's shadow. So, I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, they don't understand the rim or whatever they call that, the ring around the darkness. I mean, that is still the sun, and it is still super bright, and it will still hurt your eyes. So, I don't know. But this is just a for fun question before I go to phone calls here. What natural / scientific phenomenon, if you could only see one thing up close, would you like to see? Would it be an eclipse like this? Or would it be a volcano? Again, if you were not going to be harmed by it, erupting, or a tornado. And I'm talking about solely from a, oh my God, look at nature vantage point. I don't want anybody to die. I don't want anybody's property to be destroyed. I don't want anybody's eyes burning out from the eclipse. But if you could be like the storm chasers do up close and personal and see the power of a tornado, or and I mean like really, really experience it, or be near one of the volcanic eruptions and actually see what nature looks like when it's really, 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 you know, just in its fury. Or see a solar eclipse. I got to tell you, eclipse is boring as hell as far as it's on my list. I would rather do any one of those other things. And again, that's stipulating. Nobody gets hurt, least of all me. But nobody gets hurt. Nobody's property gets damaged. But if I could experience nature in such a, I don't know, an incredible way. I mean, watching the shadow of the earth blanket the sun isn't exactly, you know, up high on my list. Okay, Tanya is calling us from Akron, 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Tanya, good morning. Go right ahead.
Good morning, Bobby. You had so much that was going on. I don't even know where to start anymore. but my main thing, one of the things I just wanted to talk about, the South Carolina coach. She made that statement on Saturday evening, or sometime Saturday.
Yeah.
About, and then did you see her yesterday after the game, how she was praising God, and it was like, on one hand, you're praising God for all the things he can do, but you're saying that he's, on the other hand, you're saying that he made a mistake when some idiot, not idiot, I'm sorry, some confused person believes that their body and their mind are not in sync. And a 6'5" man to play basketball with a young woman on a team, and you would have no problem with that.
But Tanya, I don't think she was saying that at all. I don't think she believed a word of it. That's why I think Riley Gaines was right there when she analyzed, said, you saw her pause, you saw her shrug, you saw her take a drink of water, trying to figure out, what do I say right now that isn't going to get me canceled? What do I say right now that isn't going to get me in trouble? If I say, no, only girls should play girls' sports, I'm going to get hit by the LGBTQ community and all of the progressives who are going to try to tell me that a trans woman is a woman and they should all be allowed to do whatever their identity tells them they should do. She was in a position where she didn't know what to do, so she defaulted to political correctness. She didn't want to take on the cancel culture crowd, so she said something she did not believe. I don't think she believes men should be playing in women's sports. She loves women's sports. She's one of the greatest of all time playing it and coaching it. And she knows it, but she was just caught in a spot where she didn't know what to say that wouldn't get her in more trouble.
So who do you respect more, someone who really believes their ideology or someone that's too coward to stand up for theirs?
I respect somebody who believes it more. Because I can debate with them. I can say if they believe in an ideology with which I disagree, and they're true believers, let's talk. And I think I can debate, and I think I can convince them to see things a certain way. But if somebody is just lying to protect their A, if somebody says, I think men should be able to play our sport, you know, in such a way, and they're just trying to say, I don't want to get canceled, there's nothing you can do with that person. You said it yourself. It's cowardly, and there no debate and no discussion and no dialogue would be helpful. It's like that. You saw what happened with the soccer player, right? That Megan Rapinoe criticized, the U.S. women's national player. She got booed. They had a game like on Saturday or something. She was introduced. She got booed, and all she did was retweet some stuff or repost on Instagram or something, some stuff that basically says, I can't remember the specifics of it, but basically, you know, related to, you know, biology being biology and
science,
you know,
being science.
Yeah, science being science. And Megan Rapinoe goes nuts on her because she is like the most ridiculous. She's the female Colin Kaepernick of activists. And now this poor soccer player who simply repeated her belief in science and her belief in God, and now she's being booed on U.S. She plays for the U.S. Women's National Team, and she's being booed for it. So you don't think Dawn Staley saw that? I promise you she saw that, and that's the reason why she's like, I'm not going to get into this and get myself hated by all of the progressives out there. Because as a black woman, too, you know that she is probably, you know, in the world of identity politics, she's aligned with the progressives. Even if she's not aligned with the alignment with the trans part of this whole thing, those are her people. And she wasn't going to take them on. That's why she just figured, I'm going to say what I think needs to be said here instead of what I truly believe, because I don't want to fight them. These are my people.
You know, and the problem with that is so many of us that have been, you know, I stood by myself when I, 4 years ago, when I was talking about, you know, BLM, lost friends, lost, you know, relatives that don't speak to me. But I was standing up for something that's right, okay? And we have people in these prominent positions that do not have the courage or their conviction. Everything is going to cost something. And when one of her girls in 2 years plays on a team with a male and she is injured, it will be Dawn Staley's fault. She
That's
will
right.
have participated in that.
That's
okay,
exactly
she will have
right.
participated.
And that will happen because okay. it's already happening. There is a database.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing that they said, the thing that's so special about basketball, LeBron James' son, Bronny, has not played as a woman yet. When he does, it's going to hurt.
Yep, that's exactly right. Okay. There is a list, by the way, of women who have been injured by men in these events, where they're particularly contact events, where they're allowed to participate. And then there's another one of just victors. In other words, the number of times men have stolen glory from the women by participating in their events and then winning them. There's a lot of that stuff, and I promise you, Dawn Staley, if that became normalized, she would quit probably coaching, or she'd be out there recruiting men and saying, "Hey, just say you're a woman, will you please, and come and play for me so I can win another national championship." One way or the other.
Well, if she said that, she wouldn't be. We would be talking. We can't say that she didn't believe it. If she goes recruiting, she believes it.
Yeah, well, either that or she just knows that this is the way it is now. It's kind of like with NIL. You know, there are coaches like Nick Saban who just quit and said, I'm done. I'm not going to go out there buying players. This is ridiculous. But others who hate it, but they're, you know, they're not Nick Saban, you know, where they're close to retirement age anyway. They just have to deal with it. They hate it. But they know that if I want that five-star quarterback, the top prospect in the country out of Texas, to come and play for me, I've got to guarantee him $250,000 in NIL money or $1 million in NIL money. They hate it, but they're just going to do it because that's what has become the rule. Well, if the rule becomes guys can play with girls' sports, she doesn't have to believe it to say, if I want to win, I got to compete. I got to do what everybody else is doing here and go get the players that identify as women. I would give her that break and realize that she may not believe in it, but she knows she has to do it.
Well, you know, even if she doesn't believe in it, she should have just passed like the Iowa coach.
Yes. That would have been the smartest thing to do, say, you know what, I'm here to talk about basketball.
That would have been the most. It would have been another cowardly way out, but it would at least you would have maintained your principle.
But you know what? But she could have done it without being cowardly, too, though, because she could have just said, you know what? We are sitting here at the Final Four. Ask me about South Carolina players. Ask me about Iowa players. Ask me about game strategy. Ask me about how we got here. Ask me about the Final Four. That's what I'm here for, not to play gotcha games. That's what she should have said.
That's exactly what she should have said.
Yep.
Okay, so my whole point in all of this is that we're going to have a lot of criticism from the left and the right on President Trump because they're not going to think he went broad enough either. But he went right down the middle. He said, hey, there's murder on one side. We're not for murder. Okay. It's back in the state's court, and you have to deal with it. How do we teach our cowardly Republican conversations, political candidates, how to have these conversations that don't have to, that they can stand their ground, but let us know how they're gonna deal with things. You know,
it's
talk about abortion. They can't talk about gender. They don't want to talk about, you know, they won't talk about same-sex marriage like it's over. That is the whole point right now. It may be over, but you don't have to act like it isn't affecting everything that's happening in the world right now.
Right on. I'm with you. Tanya, I appreciate your call. Good stuff, always. We're going to move on. You got it.
You're one guy that comes that replaces you on when you're gone sometime. I can't. Clement. What is his name?
Peter Kersenow?
Not Peter.
Oh, Khalid. Khalid Namar? Khalid Namar is one of my guys.
Why don't you get him to come on and talk about a book called Color Communists and Common Sense by Manning Johnson. Phenomenal book. It tells you why we're here where we're at right now.
I might have to do just that. And he sounds like maybe a good guy to interview, too. So that's good stuff. Tanya, thank you. Appreciate you. Let's go to Laura, calling us from Wadsworth next. Hi, Laura. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
You've probably already gotten a couple messages about this, but I wanted to let your listeners know that the meeting for the United Sovereign Americans, where Marley Hornick will be presenting on Wednesday night at 7 p.m., that is not a private residence. The gentleman happens to live there, but it is his place of work, and the address is 7291 Stone Road in Medina.
Okay, see, I had the 7291 Stone Road, but normally whenever I see flyers for events like this, it'll say at the blank blank, you know, the name of the location of the business, and here's the street address. This one just gave a street address. So I did a search. I don't Google. I did a search on DuckDuckGo, and I put in 7291 Stone Road, and I wanted to find out what business it was. And you know what the response is? Let's see here. I think I still have it up.
It's a private residence. Yeah, that's what it shows.
It's a single-family home with three beds and five-bath property, and it's not for sale. It was built in 90. I'm like, what? We're not sending people to somebody's single-family home, are we? That's why I didn't want to read it on the radio.
No, it'll be in the big basketball court there on that property. You'll probably see plenty of people walking in. So if people aren't familiar with it, just follow the crowd.
So what is it? Is it like an auditorium? Well, you said somebody lives there, but it's not a house.
Yeah, he has his place of business, and he has a big basketball court. I believe it's an official size basketball court.
Wow.
Lots of garages in that. It's a huge facility. It's actually beautiful. He has a lake out there.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, lovely.
Well, I don't know who he is, but he's great if he's donating his property for these events like this. That's fantastic. So
he absolutely is, definitely. Well,
very good. So 7291 Stone Road in Medina, 7 p.m. on Wednesday. That's when you can hear Marley Hornick and the other folks from the American Sovereignty Organization trying to help educate us all on what it's going to take to make sure we have free, fair, valid, keyword valid elections. So good
great
stuff. Anything else, Laura?
That's it, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you calling to give us that clarification. Like I said, the worst thing in the world for me would have been to say, here, go to 7291 Stone Road in Medina and have a whole bunch of people's cars going up to knock on somebody's door and saying, we're here for the meeting. And people going, who are you people? Why? So I just wanted to make sure I knew what the business or what the venue was. So thank you. Charlie, in Brown Helm Township. Hi, Charlie. Go ahead.
Yeah, past where you live. Hey, Bob. Yeah, I've been out to that Stone Road. It's a beautiful facility. It looks like it could be a company. You know, it's got a tall, hundreds of people can fit in there, so don't worry about it.
Awesome.
He's got two flags. He's got an American flag and then some Middle Eastern flag, so he's probably a Middle Eastern descent. I don't know. But it's a nice facility. I took pictures.
Well, that's awesome.
Bob,
good to hear.
Mm-hmm. What I'm calling about is how this border thing has just become extremely personal to me. You've met my wife. I've been married 11 years. Well, 20 years ago, her husband was Jordanian or Palestinian Jordanian, and he got in trouble. He went to prison for 7 years for dealing drugs. They deported him. We thought he was gone forever. She never had any contact with him. She raised her daughter by herself. Well, the last 2 weeks, we've been getting texts. He's on his way. He flew to England, then he flew to Mexico. And now he's walking across the desert. And yesterday, he's in Texas waiting for his brother to pick him up. He said it was easy to come across the border, and he can't wait to be reunited with my wife. And it's just, you know, it got really, I go, this Biden, he's ruining my life. But I'm thinking deeper that all these deported guys, they're usually really bad hombres. We deport them for a reason. And they're criminals, and they're coming back. It's not just him. It's all of them. They're coming here, and we're never going to get rid of this. This is going to be decades of criminals. And what else do criminals do but do more crime? And this is a dangerous thing. This Biden has really put us all, you know, this is personal to me. My pastor said, you know, exercise your Second Amendment because, you know, I may have to go to the FBI. I don't want to be the guy that drops the dime on the guy. I'm sure there's laws. If you come back after you've been in prison and deported, you're going back to prison. And nobody's, you know, I don't think they're even looking for these people. We're going to have hundreds of thousands of deported people all back here.
There's no doubt. Yeah. It has been going on. I mean, you've seen numerous cases of violent crimes being committed by people who have been deported once, twice, three times more. And it is. This is 100% the responsibility of the president who said open the border. And he did so without Congress. He doesn't need Congress to shut it. He didn't need Congress to open it. This is what he did. And you're right. It's going to lead to people like him, you know, your wife's ex, and other very violent and dangerous people committing repeat crimes, you know, recidivism is what they call it. And you know what? We're to the point now, Charlie, where it would be better, strangely, for us to arrest these people and lock them in American jails, which cost us money, than deporting them and then letting them march right back across again and commit more crimes, which cost us lives. That's the sad reality of it. We don't have a good option on either side here. But you know what? It's time to start locking them up if deporting them doesn't keep them deported.
And I've been listening. I told my wife, do not delete these texts. I might have to go to the FBI with this stuff. You know, she, I'm going to delete them. I don't want to talk to him anymore. I go, you know, he's delusional for one. He's been dreaming about coming back for 20 years because I guess the law separated them. That's how they got divorced.
Yeah.
And he's coming back. He's leaving four children and a wife to come over here for some delusion to get back with my wife. My wife is scared to death. And I'm, you know, I'm not afraid.
I will defend,
but I will defend myself. And, this is just part of it. This is just a small, this is my story, but this is being repeated.
Well, yeah, your story is one, and you're right about that. And thank you for the call, my friend. Your story is one of millions like it, where people, you know, literally. There are dangerous people flowing across the country by the millions. Who knows who is going to be targeted next, whether it be a person with a history like you, your wife has with her ex, or not. It puts people in danger. That's the bottom line. We'll be back.
And the answer.
All right. 11:34, final segment. If you want to get in, you can get in at 216-901-0945 or 888-281-1110. Either one of those will get you here. It was a really good conversation that we had there with Tanya because this deserves more discussion, not because of women's basketball, but because of the bigger picture of what she is saying about, you know, what Dawn Staley, the head coach. And by the way, for those who don't follow women's basketball, I'm one. I just don't. I like that they have women's basketball because every woman and girl should have every opportunity to play the same games the guys play. That's what Title IX was all about, and I'm a full supporter. I don't like the idea of them surrendering their sports to guys because of this ridiculous, stupid fantasy movement that this culture finds itself in right now. But Dawn Staley's answer there is so important, not because of what she decided to answer, but because of how she answered it. You knew she did not believe this for one second. She took a drink of water. She sat there silent. She was like, what do I say? What do I say? What do I say? What do I say? If I say, no, women's sports is for women, I'm going to get the wrath of the LGBTQ movement, the progressives who typically back me because I'm black, so I'm a woman of color. So the progressives are on my side. I'm on their side. I can't get them mad at me and say that, no, these men shouldn't be allowed to play with us. But I don't want to say that they should be because it's kind of stupid. It would kill my sport. She didn't know what to do. And the fact that we have put people in this position is important. I mean, I really think this is much bigger than this moment. I think Dawn Staley's answer is bigger than women's basketball or, you know, South Carolina or any of the storylines that were connected to this. Because she is emblematic of people who don't know what to say because they're afraid of being canceled. What kind of a country have we built for ourselves where we're terrified to tell the truth? Because if we do, we're going to pay a heavy price for it.
She's facing women's sports right now is the debate, discussion topic about the inclusion of transgender athletes, biological males, in women's sports. I was wondering if you would tell me your position on that issue.
Damn, you got deep on me, then. I'm under the opinion of if you're a woman, you should play. If you consider yourself a woman, or and you want to play sports, or vice versa, you should be able to play.
She doesn't believe that for one second. That's what took her so long. She couldn't figure out how to answer it without getting herself in trouble. And she was right to be worried about that, because she is being hammered, and I think rightfully so, by people who just look at what she said and say, how dare she say that? She would be livid if LeBron James' son, Bronny James, you know, decided, I feel pretty, I'm going to paint my nails and put on a wig, and now I'm going to go play against Dawn Staley's South Carolina team next year. She'd be livid about that. No way. And she'd be right to be livid about that. So she doesn't want that, but then she knew she couldn't say no because of what the cancel culture would do to her. So it's not about what she said to me. It's about how she said it and how conflicted she was, because she knew. And we should not be in a free country like this. We should not be scared to tell the truth, that women are women and men are men, and they should not play against one another in sports. Period. Point blank. End of story. That's why I was so happy to hear Riley Gaines tell the truth about what Dawn Staley refused to tell the truth
great
about.
Great at what she does, and she's developed many incredible athletes whom I admire, but she's either proven herself, to your point, to be entirely incompetent or a sellout. And personally, I don't think she believes what she said. If you watch the video, her silence, the hesitation, and that drink of water, I think it spoke volumes. I think she knew she had to be politically correct, and I know about as good as anyone that pressure exists. And it's real. But the bottom line is, she knows perfectly well that men's basketball, it's a totally different sport than women's basketball. That's obvious by the speed of the game, the size of the ball, the sheer amount of layups in women's basketball compared to dunks when a player gets a fast break in men's basketball, the distance of the three-point line, the list goes on. So what I think this boils down to is, she didn't have the courage to stand with women. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for her, and she blew it. And truthfully, my guess is she's okay with it until her team is defeated by one or more men playing on the opposite team.
Spot on. Absolutely spot on by Riley Gaines there. Okay, let's go to Sally, who's in Berea. Hi, Sally. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, Bob. My choice of a natural wonder would be a double rainbow that goes from one end of the horizon to the other, because it's beautiful. And also, it'd be great if it had a pot of gold at the end, because then we could donate it to the fall election to make America great again, and also to help Bernie Moreno finally defeat Sherrod Brown. Thanks, Bob.
You got it. I appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I've never seen a double rainbow, so that would be interesting too. But I like the, I don't want to say I like the fury of nature when you see a natural, you know, occurrence like that, because they always lead to devastation and they lead to people losing their property or their lives. I don't like that aspect of it, but the power of nature is an astounding thing to see, like tidal waves. If tidal waves crashed on empty shores, you know, talking about the massive ones, and they weren't going to swallow up an entire community or civilization area, I would love to see one of those up close, because I'm just in awe of the power of nature. And the shadow of the earth going in front of the sun for a couple of minutes doesn't quite measure up to it on my book, or in my book. Joanne in Twinsburg. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
You know, I think it was the day after you substituted for Prager.
Mm-hmm.
He brought up a statistic that he found that said that 25% of Democrats who make over $150,000 a year
are willing to cheat in order to win. That is just amazing to me. I mean, that many people in this country are willing to have unfair elections? I mean, am I crazy?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the money part of that means. You know, the incomes?
Well, I mean, he was talking about how these elites are so desperate.
Right.
You know, to have democratic rule. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, I can't believe they're making money in this economy.
That's a great point. That's a great point. But no, to be truthful, Joanne, it doesn't surprise me because of the current candidate that, you know, they would be opposing here. As we've all said many times, they truly believe Trump to be Hitler. They're idiots.
Yeah, they do.
They're absolutely idiots.
You're right.
But they truly believe that. Crazy. So their justification is, hey, again, if somebody in 1938 could have stopped Hitler before he invaded Poland and started doing what he did, wouldn't you want him to do it? If they could have stopped him by cheating, if they could have stopped him by assassination, they would have been like, yes, somebody should have taken that and done it.
That's not out of the realm of possibility.
No, it's not.
Still, but
it's totally not.
And
sad
it's
to say. It's
terrifying.
I mean,
you're going to need a Pope-mobile here pretty soon.
Yes, I would triple or quadruple my Secret Service if I was Donald Trump. No question.
Yeah,
I mean, 'cause that's how they are.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And one other thing about this NBA, you know, this basketball coach, you know, I want to know what happens when the first mediocre 6'4" white guy tries to get into the WNBA. Come on. I mean, let's face it. What is going to happen? Are they going to say it's perfectly okay? Then why have the WNBA? I mean, frankly, why have the WNBA? If you're going to erase women, just do it.
Totally agree.
And get it over with.
Totally agree. And by the way, it wouldn't even need to be a 7-foot-plus or whatever, meteoric or white guy.
Right.
All it would take, truly, and thank you, Joanne, for the call, a high school kid who's a good player on a good team, a male, is going to go into the WNBA and average 30 points a game and destroy the league. That's just period. That's just it. That's there's no other way to say it. That's reality. The WNBA champions.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.